Hello and welcome to Inside Education. I'm Sean Delaney and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes or so. This is the 99th Inside Education programme, and to mark our 100th programme, next week I'll be speaking to the Minister for Education, Rory Quinn. If you have any questions that you'd like me to put to the Minister, please email your questions to me at insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. The interview will be recorded early in the week, so please email those questions to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie as soon as possible. You can also submit a question by text message to 086-8962-665. That text number again for your questions for the Minister for Education, Rory Quinn, is 086-8962-665. And next week's 100th Inside Education programme will feature the interview with the Minister. But first to this week's programme. Later on, I'll be speaking live on the phone to Áine Lynch, who is the CEO of the National Parents Council Primary. The council held their education conference this weekend, and Áine Lynch will tell us about the items that were on their agenda. However, we'll go first to Barry Hennessy, who will bring us this week's education news. You're welcome, Barry.
Hello again, Sean. The future direction of modern languages teaching in post-primary schools was thrown wide open in an adjournment debate in the Dáil recently, when the Minister of State at the Department of Education and Skills, Ciarán Cannon, said that the need for applicants to NUI colleges to do a modern foreign language at Leaving Cert may have to be reviewed. Minister Cannon said that there's an economic imperative to encourage more students to take science subjects at senior cycle. Responding to Labour's Deputy Ciarán Lynch, the Junior Education Minister also said that any introduction of new foreign languages, such as Polish or Mandarin Chinese, into Irish schools might have to come at the expense of some languages currently being taught. Well, now the employers group IBEC has rode into the languages debate with strong criticism of any downgrading of modern languages in Irish schools, arguing that Irish businesses are struggling to recruit staff with sufficient language skills. IBEC's head of education policy is Tony Donoghue.
I definitely don't think this would be a positive development. The feedback we're getting from companies now is that there's a greater premium being put on languages. One only has to look at some of the job websites to see the amount of jobs in banking, finance, sales, marketing, customer service, a whole range of jobs that actually require languages. They've come up the business agenda actually as a policy priority, both for foreign direct investment for multinational companies who locate here and locate a lot of their technical support centres here. And in relation to that, the internationally traded services sector is hugely important. At the moment, our exports and internationally traded services are amongst the highest per capita in the world. They require a huge level of human interaction by their very nature, and that in turn provides a language requirement. The second thing is our indigenous sector, where we're really going to have to look for the job growth. And if they are to retain a competitive advantage, they need to be able to sell in the native tongue of their customers.
When a business is out there looking to recruit people with language skills, are they interested in what skills may be out there among the domestic population, or are they in reality looking to bring in native speakers whose language skills will obviously be second to none in the target language?
All things being equal, they will look to firstly source Irish people. I mean, there's fewer relocation costs, fewer complexities, and you can tie them in more into the company itself. So, and there is a level of proficiency which, you know, is adequate for business interactions. So they will actually look locally if those language skills are available. But it's normally a combination of language and something else, whether it's language and marketing or language and IT or language and finance. So it's a combination of the two.
Now, the second issue that was contained in that answer from the Department of Education concerned the introduction of new languages. And there's nothing new in this to the extent that people have been suggesting for several years that we need to keep pace with the countries whose economic importance to us is on the increase. But the suggestion was contained there that any new languages brought in might involve the discontinuing of existing languages on the curriculum. Would that be an acceptable trade-off?
It's probably, it highlights the problem with the way we approach languages generally. I wouldn't be normally one that's asking for a policy in education. We tend to have too many policies in education, not enough implementation. But this is an area where we've actually had no language, no policy at all. So we need a policy around what we teach and, more importantly, how we provide an integrated curriculum. So you wouldn't have this issue of one language goes on, the other language falls off. If you come up with an integrated way of teaching languages across a range of languages, you're more likely to be able to cope with this demand for diversification. You're going to have a greater level of diversification. I mean, the great imponderable here is Irish, for example. I mean, we learn Irish for 12 to 13 years, and yet so many pupils come out of school with only a rudimentary knowledge. Irish should actually be a strength in our education system, but it should be taught in a way as a modern language. And we need to get that connection across the language curriculum.
Tony Donoghue of IBEC there. There was some good news this week for post-primary teachers who'll be seeking employment over the summer months. Secondary school principals in Dublin and the rest of Leinster have been cleared to fill their remaining vacancies following the conclusion of the national redeployment scheme in the east of the country. It's hoped that redeployment will be completed in the south and the west within a week or so. Thousands of temporary teachers around the country should also find out soon if their posts are safe for next year. The one minor sting in the tail is that any permanent posts that were not declared to the redeployment scheme before the end of May can now only be filled on a fixed term basis for next year. This is because the redeployment scheme will operate every year from now on, although it's expected that the numbers of teachers involved will be fewer in the future. The report of the government's value for money review of the special needs assistance scheme in schools was published this week. The review found that whilst the scheme is successful in meeting the needs of students who require additional care, its purpose is often not fully understood by parents and schools. Since care assistants were first placed in schools in 1979, there's been significant role creep, with SNAs increasingly providing support of an educational nature as opposed to attending solely to the individual care needs of pupils. This role creep, the report concludes, partly accounts for an increase of 922% in the costs of the scheme since 2001. Other significant factors include the non-removal of SNAs who were no longer required, changes in legislation, and an increase in the number of students being granted SNAs. The Value for Money report calls for the SNA scheme to be retained. However, it says that all posts should be reviewed on an annual basis, that the SNA's role as a care worker should be clarified, and that consideration should be given to a regional redeployment scheme for SNAs who are no longer needed in a particular school. The Minister for Education and Skills, Rory Quinn, has said he'll be meeting with school book publishers in a bid to reduce the annual cost of textbooks to parents. The Minister says he'll be encouraging schools to put book rental schemes in place in a bid to reduce the financial strain on parents, many of whom have suffered a fall in income. However, Rory Quinn says he'll be talking to publishers too to encourage them to keep new editions of books to a minimum. And that is this week's Education News. Sean.
Thanks for that, Barry. And Barry Hennessy will, of course, be back at the same time next week with more education news. You're listening to Inside Education on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Podcasts of previous programmes can be downloaded from iTunes or from our website, insideed.com. You can contact the programme by text message on 086 8962 665. On Saturday, the 11th of June, the National Parents' Council Primary held its 2011 Education Conference in the National College of Ireland. The theme of the conference this year was Parental Involvement in Children's Learning, summarised by the slogan, Your Child Needs You. The speakers on the day were Minister for Education Rory Quinn, Neil Griffiths, the Chief Executive of the National Council for Curriculum and Assessment Anne Looney, and psychologist Caroline Dench and teacher Joan Christie. In order to find out more about the conference, I'm joined now live on the phone by the CEO of the National Parents' Council Primary, Áine Lynch. Hello, Áine.
Good evening, Sean.
Áine, thanks very much for joining me this evening. And I wonder, could you just tell us a little bit about how the conference went, how many people attended it, and how successful was it in your view?
Very successful. We had about 160 parents attend in the National College of Ireland, And we had overwhelmingly positive feedback after the day. So we were very pleased with the way the conference went.
As you mentioned, or as I mentioned there, the theme for the conference this year was Your Child Needs You. Mm. How did you come up with that theme?
I suppose it's something that's been gathering pace within our organisation over the last number of years. I suppose maybe over 10 years ago now, there was kind of a general belief based on research that children who are not doing well in school, generally it's for socioeconomic and, you know, kind of disadvantaged reasons that they're not doing well when they're in school. And within the last 10 years, the thinking around that has changed quite considerably. And there's a lot of research within the last 10 years that would say, regardless of a child's background, whether they're living in disadvantaged areas, whether it doesn't matter about their parents' educational background or economic circumstances, if parents are involved in their children's learning, then the children will do better at school. And I suppose as that research has been gaining momentum over the last 10 years, from the National Parents Council point of view, we're kind of saying, well, look, maybe educational disadvantage should be redefined more in terms of parental involvement rather than socioeconomic reasons. And I suppose because of that, we're saying, well, it's very easy to say parents need to be involved, but parents need support in knowing how to be involved. So I suppose that's what informed the theme of the conference this year and last year, in fact, because our conference last year was about parents' involvement in their children's literacy lives and their reading. So it's informed the last 2 years' conference.
So if we put it in a positive way, then you're saying that children can be advantaged if their parents take part in their education.
Absolutely. And I think the fact that the research is now saying that parental involvement has a bigger impact than the other factors that we'd previously thought of, it's actually much more optimistic outlook, because previously when we believed that it was predominantly influenced by the socioeconomic factors, it can be very hard to break those cycles of disadvantage. There's many governments over many years have tried to break the cycles of poverty and socioeconomic disadvantage. But if we're saying actually that they may be factors, but they're not the biggest factors. And actually, even with those factors in play, if parents are getting involved in their children's learning, that will have more of an impact anyway. So it's a much more optimistic outlook, really, for children in school today. We don't need to wait to break those cycles that we've been trying to break for many decades. We actually can do something for children in school today, and the parents of children in school can do something.
And from your experience of working with parents in Irish primary schools, Áine, do you find that it's harder to motivate parents whose children are attending schools designated as disadvantaged than it is to motivate other parents to become involved in their children's education?
I'm not sure motivation is the issue. I mean, I think sometimes parents have different views of how they can help their children. Our experience of parents is that predominantly in the main, the vast majority of parents want to do anything for their children that needs to be done. But if you're a parent who found education very difficult themselves, who didn't find education, who weren't successful or didn't feel they were successful in education, who have been maybe long-term unemployed and haven't felt that education has supported them, it can be very difficult, if those parents aren't supported to, for them to feel that they have anything to contribute to their children's educational lives. Yet we know with research that they have very, very significant things to contribute to their children's lives. And I suppose on a very, very simplified level, children really want their parents to be interested and involved in their lives and whatever they're doing. They want to have positive feedback from their parents, and they want their parents to feel good about them and feel proud of what they're doing. Now, even as grown children, we want our parents' affirmation on things that we're doing. So very young children want that even more. So when a child comes in from school and a parent asks them about their day, is interested in their day, positively reinforces the fact that they're going to school, that they're engaged in school, that they're doing their homework, all those positive messages in themselves make a big difference for children engaging in education, because those children want their parents to feel proud of them. And if the parents are putting an emphasis on education as being something they're proud of, those children will try harder and do better. And that's what the research is telling us. So parents at all levels of education can support their children to do better.
So when you're talking then about parental involvement, you're not just talking about the parent turning up in the school, but the parent can actually do things at home to be involved without necessarily coming into the school.
Absolutely, and it's about parents, I suppose, being parents do need support to do this, because parents don't always know the best ways of doing it. But it's about parents setting up a home environment that encourages education, that supports education. It's about giving positive reinforcements to children that doing well educationally is a good thing. And, you know, quite often children who are bright and doing well educationally can be, you know, kind of made fun of for that. It's not always a cool thing to be good at education. So it's about families, parents, siblings, just a general societal culture of recognising education as being a positive thing, and I suppose parents being supported to do that.
Because if you were to take this to its logical conclusion, someone might think, well, maybe the best thing of all is for parents to homeschool their children.
Well, that's, I suppose that's the extreme level of it, but I suppose school teaches so many things rather than just the curriculum. It teaches around socialisation, it teaches around, you know, how to make friends, how to work in groups, how to teamwork. And it's not to say that parents who do choose homeschooling aren't able to do that as well in different settings. But, I mean, schools as institutions have great value to children. And, you know, it's not about all children being homeschooled, but it's about parents and schools communicating with each other, parents supporting the school in their work, And just importantly, the school supporting the parents in their work, and children seeing that their parents and schools are working together for them.
I'm looking at the titles of the presentations yesterday, Áine, and one of them caught my eye in particular. It was Anne Looney's. It was called Beyond Buns and Basketball, Building Homeschool Links Around Learning. Mm. So it seems as if she's kind of addressing there what might have been a stereotype of parents baking buns for the cake sale or helping out with sports. She seemed to be advocating a more active role for parents. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I think that really is the crux of what the day was about. And, you know, in 1998, the Education Act was passed, and it gave a very crucial legislative role for parents. It gave a structure for parents' associations, so for groups of parents to have a structure within the school legally. It also gave the remit for parents to sit on schools' boards of management and have a say in the governance of schools. And, you know, the National Parents Council for many, many years have been advocating and fighting for parental involvement in children's education, both structured and informally in the home. But what we've actually got is a system of parents' associations all around the country. And when you actually ask them what they do, predominantly they fundraise. And, you know, when the Education Act was being drawn up in 1998, nobody envisaged that, you know, parents were fighting for the right to fundraise for their schools. I don't think it was a fight that needed to be fought, you know. So it was something else that was being envisaged at that time. Yet we do really have a network of fundraising committees around the schools in the form of parents' associations. Now, interestingly, I don't think that's an Irish phenomenon. It certainly is the case in the UK. And last year I would have spoken at a European conference around parental involvement and parents and principals working together in schools. And I mentioned that this was the case in Ireland, as being that parents' associations have become predominantly fundraising committees. And the whole room of, I think it was about 25 different countries there, were all nodding their heads to say the same had happened in their countries. So I don't think it's an Irish, you know, an Irish-specific issue. But I think that when we look at parental involvement in schools, all involvement is good. I mean, and the research has said that, whether it's fundraising, whether it's governance, whether it's whatever it is, children seeing their parents actively involved in their school is good. But the research very, very clearly says the parental involvement that will have the most impact on educational outcomes for children is when parents are involved in their learning. And that is the one part of it that maybe in this country we need to address, I suppose, more structurally and in a more strategic way.
Could you help make that a little bit more concrete maybe for us, Áine, about, you know, how can the parents be involved in the children's learning at school level as opposed to doing it at home? Or is that what you have in mind?
Well, I mean, there are lots of ways that parents have been, in Ireland as well, involved in children's learning in schools. We have examples of where parents go in and do reading in the class with children. We have examples where parents go in and accompany the swimming lessons to the swimming pool. So we do have ad hoc examples of that. But I suppose what I'm talking about more is where the learning of the curriculum in the classroom is transferred into ways into the home. And the last two speakers at the conference yesterday, Caroline and Joan, were very much talking about that. And they presented a program that's called Learning in Everyday Activities, which they've developed. And that very much looks at the learning that goes into the classroom, and it gives practical ways that parents can continue that learning through very, very simple things like setting the table. So one of their examples was that, you know, when children are putting cutlery away in drawers, they're putting the knives with the knives, the forks with the forks, the spoons with the spoons. They're matching like with like. And that's part of matching sets is part of maths in the primary school curriculum. So they were taking examples of things that were happening in the home every day where parents could engage with their children and actually spend a bit more time doing those and pulling out the learning values in them. So parents and children wouldn't be doing anything different, but they would be using the opportunities to show examples of learning through it. Parents need to be supported to do that. So, but they're the examples that were being shown yesterday in the conference.
One that you mentioned there, maybe is a throwaway remark, Anya, but you mentioned about listening to children reading in class. And I wonder, as a parents' organisation, would you have any concern there about ethical issues where, you know, say if a child is struggling with reading, one parent may not want another parent knowing that their child is struggling, and can that cause any difficulties for parents?
Well, I think that, you know, that comes down to the nub of the whole thing is that any involvement of parents in the classroom as such, rather than in the home, has to be very, very much planned and monitored by the teacher. I mean, the teacher will always be the person who is, I suppose, the professional in the classroom that has done the many years of training on how to teach properly and all the different, skills that go with that teaching practice that they've done. So everything has to be guided by the teacher, and it's about the teacher making those plans that make sure that those issues don't come up within the classroom.
Another question that I often wonder about is, are mothers and fathers equally involved in their children's education?
I suppose traditionally mothers have been much more involved than fathers, but I think that's changing. I mean, when I started in this job only 4 years ago, so my experience is fairly limited in terms of seeing parental engagement. But even in that four-year period, I would often go into schools and talk to parents, and we also have county branches that I'd go out to. And even within that 4 years period, the rise in fathers sitting in the rooms has been quite noticeable. There's much, much more fathers engaging in issues around their children's education within that four-year period. So I think parenting traditionally was seen as the mother's role and supported by the father, whereas I think those days are changing most dramatically, and I think fathers are seeing very much the dual parenting role that they have.
Is it particularly difficult maybe for parents whose first language is not English to be involved in their children's education? And again, I'm thinking they're more so at school level. And is that something that you as an association try to address?
It can be particularly difficult. And often, you know, even communication between the home and the school can be very reliant on the child themselves to be translating between the home and the school. And it can cause difficulties. We have been involved in that area for a number of years. A couple of years ago, we would have got some European funding where we would have done a migrant project in a number of Dublin areas where there was very high levels of inward migration and people not having English as their first language. And we would have done, a project where we tried to provide the resources that we had to parents who didn't have English. And some of that would have been involved in going in and providing one-to-one kind of help services in schools for parents with translators. And as a legacy lasting after the funding as such, we've translated quite a bit of our website into a number of different languages as well. So that will remain, and some of our information leaflets. So yes, it is a struggle. But one of the things that we did find we're doing that project because before we started, we were informed, you know, when we were kind of doing the research beforehand as to what was needed, was one of the biggest blocks was a language block, and that, you know, this is what prevented parents engaging. So, which is why we would have heavily geared the project towards translation and having translators present where we went into schools to support parents. But actually, we found out that we had to transfer that funding stream that we'd got for that into something else, because once we were in the schools with the translators, the parents came in because the translator was there. But once they started to engage and got more confidence, they actually had enough English to communicate. And the translators actually became not used at all within those sessions. So I think there's a language barrier and a confidence in initially engaging with a school. But once there's a relationship established, parents then in these circumstances often feel more confident to use the English that they have, and it became less and less of a barrier in time.
And we're coming near the end, Áine. I'm just conscious that some parents might be listening to this and saying, yeah, you know, what Áine is saying makes perfect sense. But I just don't have the time. I'm working. And, you know, what would you say to parents who might be feeling guilty that they don't have as much time to spend with their child as they might want to, and as, you know, you might be encouraging them to do?
Hard struggle, and I suppose the main thing you have to say is make the time, because the children do need time. I mean, and that is the bottom line. And whether the house is clean or the child gets time are the decisions that have to be made. And I'm not advocating that houses come into awful states, but children don't need huge amounts of time, and children do need to play on their own. But they do need good quality time, even if it's for short periods every day, having that attention, having that one-to-one attention. If children are looking for attention when you're busy, it's fine to say that you're not available then, but give them a clear message of when you will be available later for them, and make sure that you keep that appointment as such that you've made with your child. So it's not about always being available and always having the time, but it's about making sure that you do set aside time and give good quality time, and children are confident that they'll get that time. So even if there's some sort of regular time in an evening that they know that that's the time that they will have time with one or either or both of their parents.
Okay, Áine, on that note, I'll say goodbye to you, and I want to thank you very much for joining us on Inside Education today, and for telling us about the conference yesterday.
Thank you, Sean.
Okay, thank you. That's it for this week's Inside Education. You can listen to podcasts of previous programmes on insideed.com or on iTunes. Remember that next week on the programme, we'll have an interview with Ruairí Quinn to mark our 100th edition of Inside Education. But for now, that's it. I want to thank my guest, Áine Lynch from the National Parents Council, and to Barry Hennessy for the Education News. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.